Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 256 for March 16th, 2020. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com. And today we will be discussing the 338 weekly reports and talking about the exciting times in the markets that we're seeing today and the last few weeks and what my guests for this week are expecting to happen in the future. So today I have arranged for Neil Batho, Michael Filigera, John Thomas, and the option professor to join us. And Jim, the option professor, is moderating, so I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Okay, great. Thank you, David, and great to have everybody here. Obviously, the markets are absolutely gone mad in the last few weeks, and so it'll be interesting to hear what everybody's take is on what's happening now and what they think might unfold. Before we get started, for people who are new to the broadcast, I think it's important we introduce everybody. So let's start out at the top of the list here with Neil Batho of TraderReview.net. Hey, Neil, how about a little background on yourself and a little bit about Trader Review.
Sure, thanks a lot. Well, let's see, I was a broker in 98, 99 after college, and I thought it was going to be the job for me, super exciting, and I quickly found out that it's just a job of selling, and really it's not about making the picks because they want to put everyone in funds, private money managers, and stuff like that. So I had some wonderful lunches that mutual funds bought me, and it was a great time to learn about the business, so I know what that side of the business is all about. And after that, I quit. I'm not really a sales guy. I went into some business consulting, and then I started up my newsletter. I like to use my experience from that. I got a finance degree before that. And then sending out my picks to clients using something I actually learned when I was a broker, was introduced to, which is point and figure charting, which I have used to time every collapse since I've ever started my newsletter. So I send out all these things to my clients.
It'll be great to hear your input as we get through the questions here. Next up is Michael Filigera, and that's of Logical Signals. Michael, background on yourself, and of course, what's happening at Logical Signals.
LogicalSignals.com. Well, there's not much happening at Logical, LogicalSignals.com, so I need to take a sip of water. But I have been an options market maker. I started in 1979 here on the Pacific Exchange in San Francisco. I've also traded in London on the London Traded Options Market, and I've traded in Amsterdam and in Germany on the DTB. When I returned back to the United States, I went back down to the PCX and didn't stay very long because markets tended to be going more electronic. So in that vein, I left the floor, sold my seat, and came home and been here ever since. Currently, I am day trading futures, and I'm finding that in the current market conditions, that is more of the ticket than to attempt to try to control positions. Logical60.com continues to exist, but trading is really keeping me very, very busy. So not doing much over there as I probably should, but that's it.
Okay, thank you, Michael. And again, up next is John Thomas. And John, of course, is familiar to many of you, but for the uninitiated, John, a background on yourself and a little bit about the Mad Hedge Fund Trader.
Been in the market 50 years, was the head of a trading desk at Morgan Stanley, ran my own hedge fund for 10 years. We are global long short macro, which means we are looking for long and short ideas in every asset class all the time. We had big shorts in oil earlier in the year, and we were even shorting the stock market close to the highs. So you can find us at www.madhedgefundtrader.com. We have daily newsletters, biotech letters, technology letters, daily hot tips, everything you need to stay in touch with this market and stay ahead of it. And as of now, we're down only small single digits on the year in our performance. So madhedgefundtrader.com is where you go to find out more about it.
Okay, sounds great. Normally we go through questions here. They almost seem laughable in some respects, but I don't know if you guys want to give a go at it or not. The first question is normally on a Monday, where do you think the S&P will end the week?
And well, obviously this environment. laughable thing about that is the word normally.
Right. So obviously,
I think we're in another Great Depression.
Okay.
It may only last a couple of months, but depression it is. Economic activity has totally ceased across the United States, and the markets are reflecting that. And, you know, where the final bottom is anyone's guess. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a chip shot whether we bottom out at down 40%, which we could hit today or tomorrow, or down 50%, which was the 09 crash bottom. And until then, you just want to be selling every single rally.
All right. That's definitely a point of view. Let's roll it over to Neil. Neil, what's your view on this thing?
Don't ask.
Yeah, really.
Well, you know, I had a guy, he wrote me several times, a doctor, and I'm pretty sure doctors are, some are really good at managing their money, like the guy in the Big Short, Michael Burry, Big Short. But he kept writing me, should I sell? And then I just said, look, man, I'm not buying. Finally sold. So one of the things that you might want to do around your office is look for the person who is the least experienced in the whole office and see when they sell. And then when they sell, it's really going to be close to the bottom. This is called socioeconomics. If you want to have some fun, to look up socioeconomics, find some cool YouTube videos. But yeah, I'm gonna have to say down. I have to give an answer, you know.
Yeah.
I think, you know,
well, let's go through the reasons as soon as we get everybody's view here. One last view up on the block here is Michael. What are you thinking right now?
But only until 2
lower.
That's when the shorts rally.
Lower. All right, now John, you gave us some of the ideas why you think that the market is in big trouble and sell every rally. Obviously, you know, we are on lockdown, and obviously companies' revenues are going to drop. You know, one thing I read was that, or I saw on TV, actually, a guy getting interviewed from Adidas. He said in China, he lost 85% of his revenue.
It was 90%.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, I'm trying to be nice, John. I'm a kinder, gentler guy here.
You're the bull.
So anyway, yeah, 85-90%, but that's a huge number. And I guess the point being is are we ready when we announce numbers, and if they even smell like either Japan's 7.7% GDP contraction, or companies saying that their revenues are down there, and what will the market possibly do at that point? You know, Neil, do you have any?
I think there's only one number now that makes a difference. That's the number of new corona cases.
Right.
All people are seeing.
Yeah.
Let me tell you why I was late to the webinar this morning.
Okay.
I got a call from the Pentagon, the Marine Corps Commandant. They asked me to be on standby to work as a pilot because they're thinking about closing all state borders. Mm. Now, what happens if that becomes public? You know, it may be just a war game. It may be just a rumor. This is not bullish news for the stock market. I'm sorry.
No. And again, the stock market does have a valuation. And ergo, if you have no idea what the E is on PE, and this has been very well known. So, I mean, people who are, you know, still in the market hanging on for dear life, you know, they had choices such as change their asset allocation. You know, if you're 60-40 stocks and you go 20-80, you're going to have a lot less pain during this drop. And it's not very hard to switch from 60-40 to 20-80 if you're in these index things. Second thing, obviously, is the collar strategy. Sell it out of the money, call, buy a put, and you would have had at least your money bracketed for a while. So there are tactics you need to take, but if they're not taken, like any other situation, there's jeopardy to that, right?
Yeah. Well, this is the great vindication of the balanced portfolio. You know, 50% bonds, 50% stock. You had that portfolio with your bacon until now, but that strategy is now over. It's finished.
Yeah.
You can't have 50% of your portfolio in something that yields zero or close to it.
Right.
So from here on, we're going to see like maybe a 50%, you know, cash portfolio and 50% stocks.
Yeah. Not only that, the bond part of your portfolio that has offset some of the risk of the stock drop is probably not going to give you much of a buffer. So from 2,500 to 2,200 or 2,000 or wherever the heck this thing's going, is going to be a little bit on the unprotected side, right?
And people just lost their natural hedge.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, Michael, any input on, like I say, what you're seeing, what you're feeling, a little bit more specific than the one-word answer that we just got out of you, bud?
Yes, sir. That was good, Jim. I have talked often on this show and on other shows that the status quo is what really people are hanging on to. The status quo has been broken, and therefore, all bets are off in terms of, well, what do we do? I'm in it for the long term, so I'm just going to continue to buy it on the way down because markets always recover. The status quo is broken, folks. We're into a new situation, and that situation we've never been in before. In our lifetime, we have never dealt with a pandemic pandemic that's absolutely sweeping the country that is totally unprepared for it. So until we actually get more information, the only thing that we're going to see is people getting out. It's bailing time. And so that's what I think is happening. Now, on the converse of that is that when they jump in and decide to buy, we're seeing humongous moves. So the swings in the market are in excess of 400 to 500 points in a single move. So in other words, they start buying it like they did on Friday. That market jumped $1,000 in the Dow. That's a huge amount of money to be pushing in one direction or another. So I think we need to just kind of take a step back, realize if indeed you didn't do anything, your time to do it is gone. So as I heard a few people already say, your best position right now, you move into cash because at least your money is now, you know what you got versus leaving it somewhere and not knowing what you have and what you don't have. I like some of the things you mentioned, Jim, is that, you know, if you're going to try to play the market, then you've got to jump in with puts or calls, and you've got to be very nimble about it as well. But if you're
that game certainly is a very poor timing at this point too, though. You know, like I say,
I agree with you.
You know, so that's why if you're in there now, you really just have to figure out what your time horizon is. If you have a very long time horizon, you could maybe stick it out. Obviously, if you have a short time horizon, that makes it more difficult.
I agree with you. But even long-term players, it's like, you got to rethink about what you're doing here, because we don't have any clue, a true clue, as to what type of damage to the economy and to earnings is really going to be. We have an
idea. The clue obviously comes out of China. So obviously the clue comes out of Adidas minus 90% on their revenue. But their stores are now open, and it has been very slow to come back. But obviously, you know, at some point things open. So again, the real thing here is this going to be a deal where by June we're contained, and by Q3 and Q4 there's some return to something? That's the big
hope. Q3 and Q4, Jim, we would be right back into it because the next wave is going to hit next fall.
Yeah, well, I mean, like I say, these are all the one side of the story, and I've been around long enough, and you guys have been around long enough to know there's always two sides to the story. And if everyone is betting if everyone bets on the one side of the story, like they were at 3,400, and obviously anybody, I think all the panel here was well aware that 3,400 number with no GDP growth and no earnings growth was a fugazi. Then obviously you've got to also remember that, you know, when it gets low enough and the panic gets big enough that, you know, obviously you got to at least start peeking at the other side of the trade. What's very interesting to me right now, and many of the listeners, let's just get to Neil. And Neil, what's the point and figure charts telling you?
So I have something called the bullet stand. That's what I use. And if you know how game of football works, and for all our international people, I'm talking about American football, the stock market is exactly like a football. You know, you're on your own 10-yard line, it's first down. Are you going to do a running play? Probably not, right? You're going to throw a pass. Then you're getting about, 10, 15 yards away. You're on your third down. You're near the end zone. And you go, oh, God, I don't want to throw a pass. You'll get intercepted. The guy's going to run all the way back, right? So I use something called bullish percent. It's a score from 0 to 100, and it will measure what percent of stocks in the S&P 500 or any other index are on a near-term buy signal, okay? So the weak ones will fall off first. So we were at about 80%, which is very, very high, and it starts to move down 6%. That's a reversal. And now when I checked it, it was at, I believe, 3%. Mm. Only 3% of stocks in S&P 500 want a near-term breakout. And today, I'm guessing it's got to be basically 0, which even at the financial crisis, I think it was like 3 or 4. And in all of history, can't go below 0. So that's amazing. So when that ticks up, it's not a real bull market until it goes above 30, because there's going to be a lot of shakiness at the bottom. But when that breaks out off the bottom, I mean, you're in for a massive boom, just massive. I called this, you know, a few days before it happened. I said, I missed that last boom, so almost 2 weeks before it happened, just because this reversed down. And that's when I get really sketched out, and we bought bonds. So, but now I'm just going to wait till it reverses.
At this point, are you looking for that 3% number to start rising before you'd be interested in taking a bite out of anything?
Yeah, it has to move 6% to reverse. But you know what? If you miss the exact bottom,
not that important.
It goes above 30%, you're still going
to
pay.
Yeah. No, you don't. It's much better to see if you got a turn probably before you get in there. John, I wanted to ask you a question on these banks. What I'm hearing, and tell me what you think, is that many of the banks are trading underneath a tangible book. I heard JP Morgan has to get down to 60 to get to tangible book. And they're saying that people are a little overzealous of the negativity because the loan demand is going to make them a lot of money. They're making a lot of money on the bid offers with the trading because they're so wide. And they're also, the free interest margin is not as bad as people have outlined. So do you see those as the light at the end of the tunnel on these banks? Or do you think, like, a tangible book on Citicorp is supposed to be about 60, it's trading at 40. Is that a screaming buy here? Or
It's not. You know, okay. We've been of the view that legacy banks are going out of business. They'll be replaced by fintech. Right. This whole national quarantine greatly accelerates the move to online commerce of all sorts. Certainly financial transactions are a big part of that. Also, interest rates are going to be a lot lower for a lot longer. Banks do terrible in that situation. Mm-hmm. And having run a bank trading desk myself at Morgan Stanley, I can tell you that even though the spreads are wide, they have cut the capital allocation to the trading desk way back by like a half or three quarters to adjust for the risk. So, you know, and also banks trading at huge discounts to net asset value. That's not a new thing. You know, they traded down to 70-80% of book value during the crash. They stayed under 100 for about 5 years. And it's only in recent years that you actually had banks trading above book value. So, you know, too many other better things to buy than banks right here. You know, I think technology is going to lead the recovery, and it's also holding up the best. You know, Apple's only down about 20% here. So I would go with the big tech stocks. They will lead any recovery.
Now, I also heard that Japanese communication stocks and Japanese technology stocks are very interesting here. Do you, State Street was saying that, which is generally not a terrible outfit, I don't think. Are you any privy on that, or is not something you're following? Or,
you know, I've been out of Japan for so long. I don't think there's anything interesting in Japan. You know, the best mm-hmm. thing going on in Japan for a long time was SoftBank, and it's just vaporized. So, you know, whatever you find in Japan, there's almost always something 10 times better to do in the U.S.
How about that India Yes Bank? You can buy it, but you can't sell it. They call it the Hotel California trade. And
there's a lot of those. You know, approximately 20% of the entire Japanese stock market are zombie companies, which are de facto bankrupt. And the banks just relend them their interest every year so they don't default, and they can count those as good assets.
Now, are you, just one last thing before I move over to Michael, on the banks, are you indicating that your feeling is that Deutsche Bank and Societe Generale could be a blueprint on what could happen to our banks in this zero interest rate environment, which means $60 Deutsche Bank goes to $5 and Societe Generale goes from $50 down to $14? I mean, do you think it could get that?
This is in no way a financial crash. You know, you're not having big debt problems going on with the banks. You don't have anywhere near the leverage that you had in 08. You know, banks essentially can handle two coronavirus epidemics and still be okay on a capital basis. And yeah. If you notice, they're not begging for bailouts. No capital, no equity infusion, none of that.
So these European banks are much different than our banks from the standpoint of they're fighting a slow economy and no interest?
Yeah, they always took on much
more risk,
lesser credits than right. American banks did, like the Trump organization, for example.
And that's more the reason why they've hit the skids more so than just the slowdown in the GDP in Europe and the fact that interest rates are at zero or negative.
Well, those are all factors. You know, it's hard to grow in an economy that has essentially zero growth or under 1% growth.
Right.
Zero interest rates or negative interest rates for years now
right.
have been a huge drag on the banking system. That's right. why they're stumbling all over each other to lend to American companies. There's right. nobody to lend to in Europe.
All right, I'm going to switch over to Michael here, get him in here. And Michael, I know you follow the metals, so why don't you give an opinion on what's going on there? Because obviously we've broken out from 1350, ran up to 1700, and now we're back in the 1400s. And obviously there's a deflation and strong dollar thing that's kind of choking it right now. Plus, some people are saying people had profits in that, so they got to take some profits there to throw them at all these losses. I mean, what are you thinking?
Right, which I think is just, it's true. I think that is exactly what people are doing. But to tell you the truth, what really is behind these pushes in the metals, I think, is again, this is what status quo. This is what we always do. This is what we do during this. So I think that that experience in going through a move like we're going is very, very limited, because I don't know about the other panelists, but I was not alive in 1918. I was not alive during some of the other big crises when it came to what affected the general population versus a financial meltdown. But I will add, I don't necessarily agree, Jim, John, with what you were saying about the banks. These big banks, and I'm going to Citigroup, I'm going to Bank of America, and I'll start with Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan, are up to their earlobes in loans that they made, billions of dollars worth of loans that they made to the oil producers in this country.
As far as that's concerned, there's one bank, I think it might be JP Morgan, who's 7% exposure, but the other bank's exposure to the oil patch is under 5%. That's what I saw on TV.
And that's if you believe that they're telling you the truth.
Right. Well, that's right.
Okay.
But so if that's true, then they're not going to get whacked as much by the oil. But if it's untrue.
JP Morgan's gone from 140 to 90.
Well, the whole board's come down. That's for sure.
Well, I call that being whacked.
Yeah. But that's probably, it might not be from oil. But anyway, you might be right. And these numbers are incorrect. And so, yeah, you're saying that the banks could be vulnerable
to that
area.
We're talking about risk exposure, right? Yeah. There's a lot of risk exposure.
Here's what I wanted to talk to you about. Back on the point, though, Mike. Michael, I want to give you a little point here. GDX today hit 16 and change, and now it's trading at 21. That's a 30% jump off of the low today. And the gold went down to that somewhat support zone, right? 1350, 1450. I'm wondering if there was a little bit of a tide change, or this is just a little short covering rally.
Because, I'm not sure, to tell you the truth. In gold, I'm not sure. I continue to have my core position is in gold, and I'm long.
Yeah.
And I've been long for a very long time. But I will tell you, when it zipped up to 1700 and started to come back off, I put my hedges back on. When it broke 1650, right. I put my hedge on there. When it broke 1600, I put additional hedges on.
Right.
And now that it's sitting down here, I have to really consider, well, do I think that this is gonna form a bottom here and continue to rally on the fact of what's really happening versus, you know, the little interim thing that happens with people selling. I've heard the same thing. The fact that, well, interest rates and et cetera, et cetera. So therefore gold gets punished because it doesn't have that long, it doesn't pay any benefits other than just being long and you make money, or you're short and you make money. So
the fact that there's no interest out there is obviously a positive for gold, because you're not forfeiting interest income when there's no income coming.
Right.
So that's a good thing for gold.
That's being absorbed by the sellers. I mean, gold was down $70 this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, which doesn't make sense, because the coronavirus reports are getting worse. We still don't know exactly what's going to happen. So I think if you start to filter in everything, it will settle out, and I think it will resume an uptrend.
All right. I'd like to throw the gold question to Neil and John. Neil first. Obviously, there's obviously powerful deflationary forces out there. So, I mean, PPI and CPI probably are going to be pretty shocking numbers when they come out, particularly PPI. So, Neil, what do you think of gold down here? Because that was a pretty big move today, from 16 to 21 on 46 million shares in GDX. Is the point and figure telling you anything on gold that we could work with?
Well, you know, I'm going to go to something I remember from a long time ago in the financial crisis. Jim Rogers was on CNBC. I was a big Jim Rogers fan back then. I actually had my client buying his agricultural ETF. He really got it wrong in the end, because he'd sell. But when they start pumping massive amounts of money into the system, people think, oh, you know, you inject a lot of money in the system, it's fake money, it's going to make prices go up. And that's true. You know, but at the beginning when they do it, people just aren't going to buy. The prices don't go up, you know? So there was this guy from the show, CNBC or Bloomberg or something, accusing Jim Rogers, saying, what you are saying is false. They're injecting money and prices go down. And Jim is just rolling his eyes going, there is no such thing ever that you inject billions and trillions of dollars and prices don't go up, or inflation doesn't go up, right? So don't confuse prices with inflation, because the Fed just says it's the same thing, but it's not, because the inflation will come when prices just naturally go up, when economic activity becomes normal again and people start going out shopping and buying stuff.
And the consumer gets re-leveraged with the lower interest rates and housing, cars, et cetera, credit cards, et cetera.
So, and that's when gold is going to move, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the price of gold is a nice suit in New York. That's kind of like what it is, you know? So, you know, you would think, okay, I mean, the Fed could pump $1 trillion tomorrow. I don't think gold is going to move, but it's going to move at some point, you know? So you have to keep your eye on it, right?
That 1350 breakout point where we went all the way up to 1700, that would be a reasonable line in the sand if you wanted to remain somewhat positive on gold, right?
you know, I'm just,
sometimes it comes back to the breakout point.
People are more interested in that right now than gold, because cash is cash, you know.
Yeah. But again, getting back to the point and figure, do you have any information on that, or you're not really tracking it point and figure wise on the gold?
I also use the Ichimoku cloud.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be a pretty ominous cloud now.
I don't think we can show screenshots on here.
Yeah.
Are we showing screenshots on here, or no? Or we're not?
I don't think so. It's because it's audio only. So they'd have to be able to see with their ears.
I wouldn't buy it here. It broke the cloud, and you know, I mean, maybe some people are thinking about, you know, taxes and stuff. So that's another thing to think about. But you know, if gold drops further, like down to 1,200, or if it really, really sells off like it did in 2008, that came an awesome buy, right? So, and then it can rally again higher, right? But I mean, no, I'm just into cash. I'm not even into bonds right now. We bought some bonds when everything was crashing, but even bonds aren't going to save you at this point. Only cash, you know.
Well, some of the short-term funds were having some liquidity issues, like Vanguard's VCSH last week. It dropped about 5%, and according to reports, the Fed's injection of funds is trying to shore up things. You know, Treasury market number one, then the short-term stuff and commercial paper, and then go on the list. But John, getting to you, because you have got a lot of experience in the gold.
Back to $32 an ounce.
We're going back to the Nixon 1973 price, huh?
I thought you were going to steal my thunder for a second there, but look up on Wikipedia. There's a quote: "We are all Keynesians now."
Exactly. Yeah. There's no doubt about that.
My quote or yours?
Right.
That's on Wikipedia. You can look it up. And it was, I think it was Nixon didn't want to pump a bunch of money because he's like, no, you know, that's socialism, you know, and it is. I mean, a central bank is socialism, for God's sake, you know. But if you don't pump in the next election, you're going to get dumped.
Right. Yeah. Well, anyway, regarding gold, you know, long term fundamentals look great. Right now, fundamentals and technicals are completely meaningless. You have a full on panic happening, and you're getting huge margin calls on everything. So people are selling their winners to finance their losers. And that means selling of gold. I mean, they're also selling the big tech stocks for the same reason. So that's what's going on there. The good news is that if you miss the gold move of the last year or two, you're going to get another bite at the apple. You know, like everything else, you should be lining up a short list of names to pile into once corona cases peak out, and gold would be one of them. You know, if you can get gold back into the 1400s, the 1300s, the 1200s, it would be a gift. So
and then some of these tech stocks, John, I think you make a very good point. You know, a lot of people do think that it will lead us out. And Microsoft just today, finally today, went down and pierced its 200-day moving average. So, these tech stocks certainly have had a very difficult time getting sold off compared to the rest of the market.
Yeah.
And
held up quite well.
Yeah. And I mean, realistically, I mean, you know, they had a hard time. Well, they were very overbought. So obviously they had to have a pullback, as everything did. And now that pullback has occurred, and you've at least gone back. Apple, the same thing. Wasn't the 200-day average around 240? Yeah, 245. And I think that's a little bit past it now. Still above it. 254. So you're still not even at the 200-day average on these things.
Apple is 253 right now. It has a market cap of $1.3 trillion, but $250 billion of that is cash.
Yeah.
Yep. So how far down are they going to sell this thing when it has so much cash on the balance sheet?
Yeah, and Google is another one laden with cash, correct?
Yeah, Google. Microsoft also has enormous amounts of cash.
Yeah.
And, yeah,
go on, Neil, please.
I was just going to say that I came up with a little bit of schadenfreude when you were talking about Apple, because I'm just, for some reason, really, really happy Warren Buffett is losing money.
He's losing money, but what's he going to do with all that cash, John?
Warren Buffett is going to be buying like crazy. And that, you know, Warren Buffett has $120 billion in cash, and we count on him putting almost all of that to work fairly soon. You know, he's been shut out of this market for the last 5 years.
Right.
Everything was too expensive. Now everything is back in his budget again. So
he went out and bought and just came back and said he's gotten the old 1-2 punch.
Yeah, and also he already had his maximum position on Apple. cycle. So,
right. Jim, yeah. I wanted to add one thing. You brought up an extremely good point, and there's still a lot of technical trading going on. Gold, I pulled up my long term, so that's a monthly chart. The 50-day moving average on a monthly basis comes in at 1350.
Yeah.
So I as soon as you mentioned that, I went over and I took a look at it. I thought, boy, that truly is at least a resting point, if not a stopping point, to kind of get things turned around again. Now, just technically speaking, gold made a beautiful ABC Elliott ABC. This is again on the monthly chart up to 1700. So whether that stopped the rally, that finished the rally, yet to be seen. But if we're going to go on a purely technical basis, gold's going to drop below 1,000 before all is said and done. Now, we have too many other factors jumping in here that are going to keep the markets active and alive. So I think if we need to pay attention to our moving averages, and we need to pay attention to the overall structure of how this is coming off. Because it could have just been a corrective bounce, and this would have been off of, on the long-term chart, off of the 2015 lows. The December 2015 lows is what that rally from that point, which was 1,035 up to 1,700, was nothing more than a corrective rally. And now the market's going to put another larger five waves down and have to end below 1,040. That'll finish it. And then you're going to get that big, huge rally that we're all hoping for now.
All right, let's go around the horn here and get a couple of different markets and get an idea of what you guys think. Let's talk, Neil, we'll start with you. U.S. dollar. Obviously, it was going in the tank, went down to 95, which is obviously the support for the last year or so. And then, boom, it went right back up to almost 99. It's at 98 now. 100 seems to be a pretty good line in the sand. We're kind of, just meandering between 100 and 95. What do you see coming out of the dollar now that the interest rate differential has gone out the window a bit?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was going to mention some currencies today. But
we're going to mention everything today, Neil. This is a no holes barred seminar.
Okay, you're not going to mention that thing, though, that we talked about before. I'm just kidding. Where am I going to do? So a few weeks ago, something happened with the German, I think it's the bank that used to run the German mark, but now they don't, but it's not the ECB. Anyway, they are loosening their budget constraints, which means they can go deeper into deficit. And that actually made the euro rally counterintuitively for a while. But then Boris Johnson proved that he's a massive Keynesian. I think he's doing something like, oh my God, it's just a massive amount he's pumping into economy, and that the pound just tanked. Mm-hmm. But something you want to really look at is the Canadian dollar, because I remember 20 years ago when a US dollar peaked at $1.60 Canadian. Canadian dollar was like a wimpy 63 cents, and the entire Whistler parking lot was full of Washington lights for skiing, right? Now a US dollar will get to $1.39. It's just a tiny bit below $1.40, but it could easily go up to $1.55, $1.60. Don't fool around the $1.40 range. Wait till it hits like maybe $1.41, $1.41.5. And I think we're going to get it $1.40 to $1.50. You can make a huge amount of money, because if you look at Canada now, it's literally a complete joke, because you got a prime minister whose previous job was, I am not kidding you, substitute drama teacher. Okay. He's completely against oil, and oil runs the Canadian economy. Right?
Totally does. Yeah.
In the previous government, Canadian dollar reached a high of $1.06 American and went the other way for a time in like 30 years. So now it's the opposite. A lot of unemployment. Even Trump's son made a joke about some Twitter thing about the amount of jobs lost, like 200,000 jobs lost one month. And he says that'd be like 2 million in America. Anyway, so yeah, I think there's a big, big opportunity there, because no oil. Buffett pulled a liquid natural gas plant because of the railway blockades. It's just a mess. So think about some big money to be made there. Don't time the breakout, but I think $1.42, want to hit there, you're hitting a $1.45, $1.46, up to a
buck. And what does that correspond to? Like 60 cents on the dollar?
Yeah, when it's $1.60, when the US dollar is $1.60, if you reverse it, it's about 63, 64 cents.
Yeah, because during the 2000, 2005 area, you did go down to 60 cents on the dollar. So you're thinking it's a possibility to revisit a 65, 60 area. Huh?
Yeah, but it's traded the other way, US to Canadian. So
yeah, I'm just looking at the futures contract, and they express it a different way.
That's going to be a big one. And the economies are pretty intertwined, so you're not going to get these crazy moves. Like, if you're trading the pound with Boris Johnson, no one knows what he's going to do. You don't know what's going to happen. It's really a pretty predictable pair to trade with oil going down now.
Oh, yeah, it's a gimme. John, do you have an opinion on the dollar?
Yeah, it's done. We had a multi-year bull market based on the fact we had higher interest rates than any then suddenly we became the country that was lowering its interest rates faster than anyone, to the country that has zero rates like everyone. So I think the dollar is done now for several years, and you want to be shorting every dollar rally against the euro, the yen, the British pound, the Canadian dollar.
The Swiss franc's pretty good, probably, right?
Yeah. Well, the Swiss franc is a different story, but yeah. The only thing I wouldn't sell, I'd especially be buying Australian dollars down here.
Oh, yeah.
Because they'll be the first to recover on any corona slowdown.
Yeah, the New Zealand dollar, Canadian dollar, they're getting down to, really, really low levels. I mean, they get down to 50 cents on the dollar. It's twice the money that we have. That sounds like a lot.
Yeah. It's been a long play for years. And the last month or so, it's been a short play and quite a good one. So
yeah, you're at 60 cents on the dollar. You're at 60 cents on the dollar on the Aussie and New Zealand. Certainly, if it went down to 50 cents on the dollar, it'd be very, very discounted
in the 08 crash. But 08 crash levels are on the table now for all asset classes.
Yeah, and there's no doubt. Michael, your view on the dollar?
My view on the dollar is that it's going to go through its adjustment to what's happening. But I think that really, again, I'm just going to stress, guys, that the status quo is out the window. We're in new territory. This is all new. And so how markets react, I think it's going to be very difficult to try to predict going out, well, this is going to happen or that's going to happen, or something's done for the foreseeable future. Because again, we don't have enough facts to really be pushing things out too far. So I think it's like, yes, if you're going to play the dollar, you play it according to what's actually happening right in front of you. So I think that taking a long-term position in anything right now could be really dangerous, unless you were willing to, as you do so eloquently, Jim, you talk about hedging, you talk about what they need to put in underneath or above to protect their money. And I think that's the correct way to move forward. Now, in the dollar, yeah, I think that it's going to find its levels, it's going to rally a little bit. But when we're talking about all the cross rates, the same thing that's happening here in the United States is happening everywhere else. So, at what level do we want to jump in and across? It's saying, particularly against the Aussie or the New Zealand, which seem to be more stable, but for how long?
Right. Across the commodity board, it's all red ink except for three things: OJ, milk, and rice. So that's quite a meal you can put together there.
The three staples in everybody's house.
Yeah. But right now, I'd like to go on the price of crude oil. Now, I was hearing today that they used the word vow when it said Saudi vows to keep pumping oil. And then they also said that pre-dividend, Aramco is still profitable as long as oil's above 15. I had read that Russia loses money underneath 40. So that is obviously a very disruptive situation. And some people are saying temporarily you could maybe get into the teens on oil. So I wanted to get a little bit of the shale guys and all that, the defaults that could happen, consolidations. But they were saying big companies like Total and Chevron could come out the other side pretty well. So I just wanted to get an idea from you guys on what you think of crude oil down here. It's in the 20s right now. Neil, start it with you, crude oil.
I've been looking at Exxon for a while. And did you know that Exxon is yielding 9.1% today?
Yep. And supposedly they're pretty solid financially for 2 years, even if it stays at this level. That's what they say anyway.
Really? Okay. Yes. Yeah. I mean, they may never drop. I mean, if they don't drop that dividend, that's a pretty good.
Well, you get a disruptive market like oil, you should be getting a situation where the dividend should jump through the roof. And then, of course, if the stock recovers, even the aristocrats had very low yields, even though they were raising dividends all the time, because the actual stock had gone through the roof. So, this is a time, but it's kind of nerve-wracking when you see the word vow and facility pumping. But you are focused a little bit on Exxon?
Yeah, I'm just looking at the 1 month chart of oil. I like to do that.
Yeah, good thing you've just been looking.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, oil is denominated in U.S. dollars, and who really controls the price of oil? It's supply and demand, but also those host market makers in New York. If they really want to drop it, they can.
I thought when Aramco came out and ran the price up to 66, Aramco dumped $2.5 trillion worth of stock on the market. They got paid. After they got paid, if you notice, they don't need to keep the price up anymore. Now it's time to go after the frackers. So, Trump always says he's a good friend of the Saudis. Well, the good friend just ran oil up to 66, basically liquidated their Aramco company, and now they're going after our frackers. They don't sound like nice guys to me.
Yeah, I worked in the oil industry for 5 years, so I can talk a little bit about this.
Sure, what do you got?
In the Middle East for 50 years. You knew that when Saudi Arabia was getting out of the oil business, that you didn't want to be in it either. And that's what the Saudi Aramco deal was all about. And they didn't raise $2.5 trillion. They only actually raised about $23 billion. It was only about a tiny percentage of the company that was actually floated. You know, my target for oil is in the mid-teens. Saudi Arabia wants to do two things, wipe out the entire U.S. fracking industry and wipe out Russia. And oil in the mid-teens, if it stays there for more than a few weeks, will do exactly that. Yep. We think the Exxon dividend is ready to be cut in half at least. And what will happen is one oil company will cut their dividend and all the others follow through at the same time. There's no way Exxon is going to maintain a 9% dividend with oil at $25, $20, or $15 a barrel. What happens next is you've had a depression in the U.S. is about to collapse U.S. oil demand from 20 million barrels a day down to 15, while the Saudis are ramping up their production from 11 million barrels a day to 13 million barrels a day. So there's an extra 7 million barrels a day of oil that nobody wants. And the end result of this could be not only a big chunk of U.S. energy going bankrupt, but another Russian revolution. I'll let you chew on that for a second.
Yeah, no, I think you make very good points. I have been hearing 15 to 20 is a target area if they wanted to go down there. And like I say, that 15 number pre-dividend for Aramco as their line in the sand is about the only company out there who that price is their line in the sand. Everybody else's line in the sand has gone bye-bye a while ago. Michael, do you have a little just a little input from Michael on the oil? Michael?
Yes, actually, I do. I think that what we really got going on, and I won't use the original word I wanted to use, but we have a huge ego contest going on between Russia and Saudi Arabia, their leaders. And it's whoever's going to win that, but it's like two trillionaires trying to duke it out for the price of oil. Now, to just add a bit, I heard that all the shale producers really need $50 a barrel or greater to continue doing what they're doing and to make any money. Therefore, being $20 underneath that really puts the pinch on the U.S. So what I personally see happening is that lack of a better word, pissing contest that we see going between Saudi Arabia and Russia is going to continue. And then who's going to start to say, well, I'm going to sell it at $25 a barrel and on and on and on until we get it down. So, Jim, I agree with your number, 15 to mid-20s, I think can really happen. But I do see us going below the 2008 low, which is at 17 and change. So, and I think once that kind of goes through, we're going to, then oil might be, you know, more interesting in terms of like picking up a position or doing something on the long side. But I think, and again, until we have more information on long-term effects, until we have, like John was mentioning, Exxon will not keep a dividend over $9. It's like, give me a break, or 9%. It's like, that's ridiculous. Right. Well, they have themselves in the ground.
They haven't cut it in so many decades, though. I mean,
right. Well, no, but Neil, I think everybody's basing it on, you know, solid information. But again, it's a new playing field right now. It's all new information. So how can we say with any certainty that they're going to hold on to it because it's drawing people to their stock? That's true.
Yeah. So the bet that they're not going to cut is that we are looking at something that ends by Q2 and that the prices do a little bit of a snapback. And when they snap back, obviously, you know, it might be helpful to them.
So I is think that basically though, Jim, and I hear you and I don't.
Because, you know, dark is before dawn.
Or the non-validity, but my point is, it's like people are caught. The general public is really caught in this mess. And they're looking for, please tell me anything that's going to relieve my stress and anxiety about every time I log in and see that my 401k has gone down another $100,000 or whatever, you know, to bring it back. So the snapback thought, and all this is, you know, we're looking at quarter two, and maybe we'll have this all under control. We don't know. There's no certainty.
You don't know, but, you know, historically, they do try to dump the market as fast as possible. It achieves two purposes. One, it locks people in so they can't sell because it's too late to sell in their mind. And the second thing is they like to get as much blood on the street as possible so that they could start at least doing some kind of recovery. So if you're in mid-March and they really want to make the blood come all out of the body as fast as possible, then the month of April, May, and June could certainly be enough time for them to do that. And then, of course, wherever it lands, wherever it lands by the end of June could be the base of which they try to rebuild from. But, you know, like in the 2008, it didn't last at the low forever. In 2001, it didn't last at the low forever. And the drop obviously was precipitous. We're obviously involved in the precipitous. So the key here would be, in my mind, is that, you know, if you looked at this thing in June and you had already spiked down to 1800 or 2200 on the S&P, you know, would that be the worst of it? And that would be the best case scenario at this point, maybe.
You know what else?
I do not agree with what you just said. I really don't. Again,
well, what I just said is a big guess.
but no, I agree. Yeah. I agree. I cannot disagree with that.
You know, and trying to put rational thought into something that nobody has any kind of an idea what's going to happen. So
that's my point. You made my point. Thank you.
Yeah. But, you know, you never know when it's going to be hitting the low in 08. You know, you didn't know it was going to stop at 667 or whatever it stopped at. You didn't know in 01 after .com it was going to stop at a certain level. So you never know. The problem here is we're coming out of the top of the World Trade or the Empire State Building, and there's a lot of floors underneath this, you know.
You're right. I agree. But I would put this to John. I put this question to John. If indeed, you know, we're looking at where levels of things are going to be safe, and do a turn. I just forgot my question, John. Please forgive me. My brain's moving faster than my mouth. But going back to what Jim just said, that how would you fit that all into relieving people's fear?
Now, what's the question?
The question seems to be like, what do you think will occur that will alleviate fears? Would it be the cases rolling?
Only one thing, corona cases,
right.
First of all in China and then here,
right.
And people will read that as the bottom of the market.
Right.
And then it bounces from there. By the way, Canada just closed all its borders to non-citizens.
All right, we got a few minutes left here. I just wanted to see if we could go around the horn here and give us maybe three sectors that you would put on your shopping list if you are going to try to look for something between now and the end of June, using that as a very wide time frame, where you'd like to pick things up. John has mentioned technology as one area, so give me three sectors, Neil, that you think would be something to accumulate when and if this thing can hit a low.
I think when the market drops a fair amount, then the companies that were the strongest before the drop usually lead it back up. But if the market drops an insane amount, that's when you can really start bottom fishing. So, I mean, people regret not buying Apple in 2008. I regret not buying Croc, Pier 1 import. You have any idea how much those things went up? I think Pier 1 imports was at something like 17 cents and went up to $45, if I recall. So look for something like that. I'm seriously not joking. Look for something crazy like Crocs or, those funny shoes or things like that. But if I want to go more on it.
So you're looking at things that go into single digits or even pennies.
I mean, do you really think those little stands where you buy those silly shoes are going out of business? Heck no, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm also looking at Cheesecake Factory because I freaking love that restaurant and mutual funds used to take me there for free. but I'm actually thinking that housing is going to rebound, and Trump's a builder. He loves low rates. The low rates from the last 10 years made him super rich. And so I'm going to look at some of the things like maybe Freeport McMoRan. I'm going to look at U.S. Steel, which is at $5. It was over 100 many years ago. I think that mortgage rates will be at record lows. And here's the one thing, if anyone in this White House administration has studied history, because I came across something recently, all of you may know that these millennials are left-wing socialists now, right? And they've never had a job and they go to college. And what do they teach in college? They don't teach you Adam Smith, The Wealth of Nations. Never was I assigned that book for reading, but I had to do a report on why communism doesn't work called Tragedy of the Commons. I never read that despicable book written by Karl Marx because I think it's despicable, but
unreadable anyway.
You know, the government has to stop these millennials from being socialist left-wing crazies. And what happened after World War II in Germany was in West Germany, people were moving to voting socialist and stuff, right?
Right.
And so the conservative government, I don't even know what they're called back then, but they had to figure out why this was happening. And it was because house prices were too high. And if you have a house, your mortgage payment's not that much, your medical's not that much, it's not going to double under socialism like Obama made it happen and to huge profits of the medical companies. But if you have a lot of leftover money, people go, hey, you want to vote left wing? And you say, why? You know, I'm 30 years old, I got $3,000 every month left over. Why bother, right? So they have to make housing affordable for young people.
Right.
And if they drop rates, I mean, you could drop the 30-year rate to 2%,
yeah.
Right?
That's so you can buy a $300,000 house for $1,000 and everybody's got $1,000 to do that. So that you're right about that.
Yeah, they have to do it. If they don't do it, America's going left.
Yeah. All right. So let's keep the pace real quick here. We got housing and tech out of you, plus the stocks that go to a single digits or even below one that have a big name to them. And that's those are the three areas you're going to look at, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's swing it over to John. And John, do you have three neighborhoods you like?
Yeah. Google, Microsoft, and Apple.
Yeah, you're right.
They all have the biggest cash balances, the biggest buyback programs, the best balance sheets. They led to the upside last time. They're going to continue to do that for another 10 years. You know, even on its best day, Apple only got up to a market multiple,
right?
Only got up to 20 times and spent the rest of the last 10 years cheap under the multiple. So,
and 5G in the cloud is not going away. And those are the big players in that area.
If anything, the virus is accelerating the move to
right.
online commerce.
Right. Would you throw Amazon in there too? Or do you think
yes,
the consumer spending?
Hmm? Yes, I would.
Okay. So that would be the I four would. Horsemen, Google, Apple, Amazon, and Microsoft. That would be the place to, you know, maybe start picking things up when you think.
Yeah. You guys were talking, I've been on Amazon buying pasta because all the stores are out of it. You can't get anywhere. But Amazon still has access to food.
I just hope you don't get diarrhea because there's no toilet paper out there anymore.
Oh, don't worry. That's the first thing we got. We have enough toilet paper for the Armageddon.
All right, Michael, close us up with three sectors or three ideas that you might like as this thing unfolds.
I think semiconductors, number one. I think that consumer products, number two, but very limited. So I would be more interested in Amazon, you know, the online retail.
Right.
I don't think people will go to the stores, but I think that they'll go there. Microsoft, love it. Love Microsoft. So I'd let it come down, let it do what it's got to do for this. But as if we are indeed going to be in recovery, I think Microsoft is well positioned to do that. I would stay away from the all-time faves like Facebook, Netflix, Nvidia. I would take a look at, but it depends on how much they bring off versus, you know, reality.
A lot of cash.
Yeah. I would not go for car makers. I would stay away from a lot of the other sectors. I would definitely not go with utilities right now. I think I'm going to stick with, like Jim, Apple, Advanced Micro, Amazon, and Microsoft. Those are all pretty dealt with. Yeah. I think, I'll toss it on a sub-level bank. You know, if we do recover, so will they.
Yeah. All right. We're at the top of the hour now. So, Neil, just a quick idea to everybody on how to reach you. And if you have any special offers, this is a great time to extend them.
Yeah, sure. Just go to my website, traderreview.net, sign up for my newsletter there. And I give some free reports. And if you sign up to be a private client, I also teach you how I time all the market collapses using a coin figure charting.
That sounds great. Okay, traderreview.net. John, over to you. How can people reach you and anything you want to extend?
I'm at www.madhedgefundtrader.com. Go to our homepage. We have a free research product for entry-level subscribers and traders. We cover all asset classes, stocks, bonds, commodities, precious metals, energy, and real estate. And all of them are looking incredibly interesting right now. So again, madhedgefundtrader.com. Look forward to working with you.
Michael, yes?
Just real quick.
Yeah.
Go and find out if you can get a second mortgage on your house and use it for a down payment on another house, because in the next 10 years, house prices can go up at least 50% inflation.
Because of the low interest rate environment. All right, Michael, real quick to you. Again, how can people get a hold of you over at Logical Signals, and any offers to extend?
I don't have any offers to extend right now, but stay tuned because there might be one coming. And I put both of my email addresses in the chat box. So it's michael@mjf1, and that's the number one, partners.com, and also michael@logicalsignals.com. So,
okay.
And I do answer emails, and I'd be more than happy to receive what people are thinking, what people are wanting to do, just so that we get a more general idea. It's like, what's happening out
there? Sure, and that's good. I'm Jim Kinney, and Option Professor. You can reach me at optionprofessor@gmail.com. I have a weekly update on my opinion and my observations. So if you'd like to get queued up on that weekly report, just hit us over at optionprofessor@gmail.com. Right now, we went over the thing a little bit, but not too bit. I think we covered a lot, and we could obviously talk all day on these things because the news is just all over the place. So I want to thank everybody for being here. And again, I'm going to turn it right now over to David.
Yeah, lots of good information today. So thanks, guys. Just a quick reminder to everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory to get all of our updates. And you can also go to timingresearch.com, get access to the recording of this show as soon as I can get it posted, and any of the past shows and reports. So I just want to thank my guests again for today one more time: Neil Batho of TraderReview.net, Michael Filigera of LogicalSignals.com, John Thomas of MadHedgeFundTrader.com, and Jim, the option professor at OptionProfessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, David.
Thank you.